Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter two. The contents of the Gita summarized. Text number one. Sanjaya uvacha. Tam tata kripya avishtam. Ashu purna kulekshanam. Vishidantamidam vakyam. Uvacha Madhusudana. Sanjaya Uvacha. Sanjaya said, Tam unto Arjuna, Tata, thus, Kripaya, by compassion, Avishtam, overwhelmed, Ashupurna Akula, full of tears, Ikshanam, eyes, Vishidantam, lamenting, Idam, these, Vakyam, words, Uvacha, said, Madhusudana, the killer of Madhu. How would you like to have a name? Imagine you name your baby after a killer. Only Krishna could have a name like that. Well, Krishna's devotees as a servant of Madhusudana. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudana Krishna spoke the following words. Purport. Material compassion and lamentation and tears are all signs of ignorance of the real self. Compassion for the eternal soul is self-realization. The word Madhusudana is significant in this verse. Lord Krishna killed the demon Madhu. And now Arjuna wanted Krishna to kill the demon of misunderstanding that had overtaken him in the discharge of his duty. No one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. A man falling in the ocean of nations cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress, the gross material body. One who does not know this and laments for the outward dress is called a Shudra. One who laments unnecessarily. Arjuna was a Kshatriya, and this conduct was not expected from him. Lord Krishna, however, can dissipate the lamentations of the ignorant man, and for this purpose the Bhagavad Gita was sung by him. This chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul, as explained by the Supreme Authority, Lord Sri Krishna. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruit results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. So the verse again. Sanjaya vacha tam tata kripya vishtam ashu purna kulekshanam vishidantam idam vakyam uvacha Madhusudana. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full compassion, his eyes filled with tears, Madhusudana Krishna spoke the following words. So you have to come back tomorrow to find out what words he spoke. If you add one and you add another one and you get three, whatever you do after that number is going to be wrong. So the whole material universe, practically speaking, has added one plus one and has gotten three, and they're very proud of their mathematical ability. Because without understanding the nature of the self, the soul, everything we do is wrong. Every conception we have is wrong. Of course, to tell ordinary people what the true conceptions are will simply disturb most people's minds. Therefore, we can see in Srila Prabhupada's preaching that often Prabhupada would not exactly say things as they were, or as they are completely, because he understood that Krishna consciousness is development of some kind of faith. Faith specifically in Krishna. But if people are too, their minds are too agitated, then of course it'll be very difficult for them to understand Krishna properly. Of course, if they don't accept what the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, what the sadhus say, of course they're not going to understand Krishna anyhow. When they were supposedly landing on the moon, I think that was probably around 1969. I was a devotee, so I didn't know what was going on. I didn't read a newspaper until like 5 years after, or 10 years after I was a devotee. I had no idea what was happening in the world. And yet the world went on. Amazing. Even without my knowing, still things went on. But at that time, when they probably asked that they bring in a television set so they could watch the moon landing. So, has anyone ever seen the pictures of the moon landing? Has you ever seen the pictures? Have you seen them? Did you see the pictures of the moon landing? You know where the moon is? You know, moon landing, you know, space. Oh, actually, maybe you're too young at that time. It was like 69. You're watching from afar. Did you see it? Nati Kachandra? David? It was on television, wasn't it?
She was watching the recordings.
Oh, okay, but it was on television, wasn't it?
I was watching.
What's that?
I was watching.
It looked like a ghost, as far as looks like. I didn't see it, but I saw it afterwards. It looked like it was like a ghost. You couldn't. It was so blurry, the whole thing. And of course, when they jumped out of the space, whatever they call it, the space capsule, and they land on the moon, then all the dust rose up. But when this big spaceship landed, or space capsule, landed on the moon, not even one speck of dust. But the moon was so ecstatic when the spaceman touched it that all the dust flew up in the air. space capsule was insignificant. It didn't bother the moon at all. But the spaceman, wow, that was a big event for the moon. And then they planted the flag and it began to wave. It was so ecstatic being on the moon. Although there's no wind supposedly on the moon, still the flag began to wave. Certainly it was even in the moon there's bhava, ecstasy. So, Prabhupada brought it in, and Govindadasya was cooking, Purushottam was watching, and was maybe some other devotees there, and Prabhupada, his remark was, it's all bogus. It's all bogus. So Purushottam said, no, Prabhupada, they did go to the moon. It's real. It's going on. It's right now. So Purushottam couldn't accept what Prabhupada said. So Prabhupada would always joke with Purushottam. Because he knew that Purushottam was a big thing for Purushottam. A big crisis of faith. So when someone burned some chapatis in the kitchen, they said, well, Govindadasi, she burnt the chapatis. So Prabhupada said, she went to the moon. And they asked, where is so-and-so? And Prabhupada said, oh, he went to the moon. He was teasing Purushottam because he just couldn't accept that they didn't go to the moon. And finally he left. Went back to college. So these ordinary philosophy is not so easy to accept, even for a devotee. Well, as Krishna will explain here in the second chapter, beginning with Deinosmi Nita Dehe, that should be sufficient to cast doubts on all our doubts. In other words, if our bodies are always changing, but we're not changing, then the thing we're most conscious of, which is our body and ourselves, even when we're asleep, we're still the same person. Did anyone ever change their identity when they were asleep? Someone else was dreaming for you. No, the one thing we're aware of, the fact that we're always present. And yet everything around us is always changing. So that should be sufficient to understand that we're an illusion. Because in spite of that knowledge, still we identify ourselves with these gross and subtle bodies. Therefore, how can we take seriously people who are in illusion? What is the value of the knowledge of a person who doesn't even know who they are? Who has perception, the fact that they always exist, and that what they're aware of is always changing, and still is convinced that they're part of the changing world? It means that they're totally in ignorance. The only difference between themselves and an animal is that they usually eat more than the animals do. There's no real difference between a so-called human being who identifies with his body and an animal. Because what's the difference? The animals are eating, the animals are sleeping, the animals are mating, and the animals are defending. The human beings, with all their intelligence, if that's all they're doing, is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then they're simply a bigger animal. And of course, in human society, they praise each other, what a big animal they are. And they glorify things that are completely insignificant. They give people huge amounts of money for doing useless things. Like, I think they just had this tennis open. What is that called? The Australian Open. And I don't know how much they get paid if they win the tournament. But what are they doing? They take a stick and they hit a ball over a net. And they get paid huge amounts of money for it. And if we give people the absolute truth and ask for €5, people complain, why are you asking for so much? Why don't you do something valuable like hit a ball over a net for humanity? So without this knowledge, human life is simply wasted. And yet Arjuna, because he doesn't have this knowledge, we can see what a predicament he's in. He's looking at his relatives and crying. Because most of us, when we look at our relatives, we cry too, but he's crying because he has to do something which is very unpleasant. Namely, he's being asked to fight against them. And normally people would say, as Prabhupada had the experience, because that's what preaching is, that people have so many objections. Arjuna was a good person. He didn't want to fight. Could you imagine Prabhupada came to America in 1966, during the start of the Vietnamese War? And Vietnamese War means that anyone with half a brain in America, or even a quarter of a brain, could understand that the war was a useless war. It was simply to exploit others. But they were being required to go to Vietnam and be killed. I don't know how many. Not only you get killed by the enemy, but you can't get killed by your own government. For what? People, they went over there and they were dying for a paddy rice field. So people didn't want to go over. They were against. There was a big anti-war movement, although the war went on going on, because basically speaking, when people kill cows and other living entities, they have to suffer the reaction. There's no protest movement that's going to stop it. In any case, Prabhupada was preaching Bhagavad Gita, the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, to all these young people who were coming, part of the anti-war movement, Krishna was telling Arjuna to fight, and Prabhupada's message was Arjuna should fight. Prabhupada didn't try to say, oh, actually, Arjuna was, you know, he was a special instance. Krishna was telling him to fight, but maybe he should have not fought. It would have been nice if he could have evaded the draft. No, Prabhupada would tell them, you know, you're part of the country. It's your responsibility to go and fight. Because when they were actually devotees, then Prabhupada tried to get them out of the fighting because he understood it was a useless war also. But they objected. Krishna was telling Arjuna to fight, encouraging Arjuna to fight, and they were objecting. Why is Krishna telling a non-violent person to fight? Gandhi was actually quite popular at that time, non-violence. Although Prabhupada said Gandhi's movement was a failure. He said the British were using him as a puppet, thinking that, you know, the Indian people were thinking that they're actually getting somewhere. But actually, Gandhi wasn't getting anywhere. The British were very happily staying there. But when Chandra Bose, when he started a war against the British using the prisoners of war that the Japanese captured, he made a deal with the Japanese that any Indian soldiers who were captured, they'd be turned over to Chandra Bose, was that his name? Netaji. Subhas Chandra Bose. Netaji was it? And that they become part of his army, so they joined his army somewhere in the east. And the British became very disturbed that now the Indians are going to fight against us. So they realized now is the time to get at India. And of course they did it in such a way as to divide India and Pakistan to make sure that India never became too prominent. They'd always have some problems with their neighbors. Everyone seems to have problems with their neighbors. In any case, Prabhupada didn't compromise because he wasn't looking simply to get the maximum number of followers. He was looking to get someone who is awake to the reality of life, the eternality of the soul, someone who is half intelligent. Otherwise, what's the sense of preaching something and people remain in the same material conception of life before and after? So the idea is that Arjuna's problem is he's thinking he's his body and he's identifying others with their body, and therefore, to kill someone as a matter of duty under the direction of the Supreme Personality of God is for their benefit. But if you tell people that in the beginning, they won't understand it. Like one time Prabhupada was talking to Srup Damodar Maharaj, and he was talking about how people are starving, Srup Damodar Maharaj, in these countries. So Prabhupada said, that's good for them. Could you imagine giving a lecture, public lecture, and telling people that, you know, what about the starving people? And then the devotee says, yeah, it's good for them. But Prabhupada said, because just like if you're in a hospital and you're sick and they tell you to fast, it's good for you. It's the way you actually get cured of your disease. So people are put into situations where they're forced to suffer certain reactions to the past activities, but that's good for them. Just like if a murderer is hung, that's good for him. That's mercy. Because then some of his sinful reactions will actually be dissipated by being the state killing him. Then some of his the reactions that he would have to face in the future are negated. But if the state doesn't properly handle criminals and encourages criminality, then the criminal suffers, the society suffers, and the government goes to hell with the criminal. So one has to understand things properly, and it's not so difficult. It's simply based upon the fact that we're eternal, all the souls are eternal, and that they get their karma according to what they do in this world. Whether they act in goodness or in passion or ignorance, they get their karmic reactions back. And if they act transcendentally, then they don't get any reaction to their activities because they're working on behalf of Krishna. In any case, nothing goes on arbitrarily. There's no injustice going on. Of course, it's not that we watch people suffer and we say, well, tough luck. You're just getting a reaction. Especially in human beings, then by acting in Krishna consciousness, then they can actually come to a higher level. Or by acting in a higher level, they'll actually advance towards a higher level. They may still have to suffer some reactions, but still they'll progress so in the future. Their reactions will be minimized. Certainly we give people knowledge because that they're all living entities are eternal, and we try to show the example of protecting cows and telling people they shouldn't eat meat, they shouldn't kill the cow, they should eat Krishna prasadam. We're not exactly vegetarians, we're Krishnarians. We encourage people to eat, offer their food to Krishna, but Krishna doesn't accept meat. And we tell people as long as they're eating meat, they're involved in, as long as they're eating things not offered to Krishna, that every mouthful is deepening their involvement in the material energy, in the complexity of material existence, of which it's not guaranteed that they're going to come back as a human being in Slovenia. They may want to come back in Slovenia, but they may not come back as a human being. I think there are more trees in Slovenia than there are human beings. Isn't that right? Quite a good amount of trees.
What's that?
What to speak of Slovenian ants? They're also citizens of Slovenia. Although no one has ever asked them for their card to prove it. But they feel that they're Slovenians as much as anyone else does. But what's the value of working in this world in order to become an ant? You remain a human soul. There's no change for the soul, but the activities of the ant are not very productive. And similarly, activities in this world without Krishna consciousness, they're not very productive. One may be acting in such a way as to generate huge amounts of money, but perhaps what is the value of it? With all that money, how many chapatis can you eat? How many feet will you take up when you go to sleep? The air is free so far. The water is free. Most of the things that are actually count, they're free. So what can you do with all the money? Simply count it, or mostly they utilize it for nefarious activities. So what's the sense of working so hard just to acquire wealth? As it says in the Bhagavatam, if that wealth is like a king with a very heavy turban on his head made out of jewels, will sink him quicker into the earth than a person without that heavy crown on his head. So Arjuna is lamenting because he's in ignorance, because he doesn't understand what actually is beneficial, how we can actually help his relatives, that because they're kshatriyas, if he kills them on the battlefield, as Krishna says, then they'll go to the heavenly planets. And if they die, and if they win, then they inherit the earth. Or they may even go, because of Krishna's being present, they may even go back to the spiritual world. And on the other hand, if they die peacefully in their beds, then they have to, what's the chances of their necessarily going to the heavenly planets if they didn't do their duties? Then they get the sinful reactions for not protecting the people, and they have to take birth in a more degraded state of being. So is that, which is actually more compassionate? So if people, as it says here in the analogy, if people in the bodily constant of life, and you think you're helping them, it's just like jumping into the water of a drowning man, to save a drowning man, and pulling off his hat and his clothing, and swimming back to the shore as the drowning man sinks into the bottom of the ocean. You saved his hat and coat, but he drowned. So which is more valuable, saving the external body, which is also necessary? We're not against helping people physically what's necessary, especially by giving them prasadam and trying to help them how to live in this world so that everyone can get their needs. It says that there's enough for everyone's needs in the world, but not enough for everyone's greed. So that people can live healthy, happily, and advance in Krishna consciousness. But the real thing is to advance the soul, to help the soul become Krishna conscious. Otherwise, decoration of a dead body is not very important. In India, when they have a funeral, as in America and in different places in the world, they decorate the dead body very nicely. As a matter of fact, sometimes they decorate the body so nicely that people will look at the body when it's dead, they think, wow, Mr. Patel, he's dead, but he never looked so healthy. I hope when I die I look so healthy too. What's the value of decorating a dead body? Even in America, you can sign a contract, and in the contract, they'll pipe in music into your coffin so that you can listen to music forever. As long as the record plays, you can hear it. The only problem is you have to choose what kind of music they're going to pipe in. Because it's very difficult to change it after you're dead. So you make a contract for jazz or rock or classical music, and you can listen to it. Now you finally got a break after working so hard to buy the casket. Now you can sleep there peacefully and listen to music eternally, supposedly. Because there's no understanding of the self. They don't care what the self goes. They don't care what happens to the self. They're only concerned that the body has a nice place to rest. So this is called ignorance. And just by people becoming enlightened in this ignorance, the whole shift in the paradigm they'll have a paradigm shift. There's a different purpose in life than just earning money. The actual purpose of life is to advance one's consciousness, ultimately towards becoming conscious of Krishna. If they see that, then they'll see actually what's the real use of their energy, what's the real use of their compassion if they want to help someone. Not just to feed them, of course the people are hungry, but who's hungry in Slovenia? Are people hungry in Slovenia? Do you know anyone hungry in Slovenia? You know someone, here's our Food for Life man, Mukundada. Are people hungry in Slovenia? No, people don't die. Usually people don't die from under-eating in Slovenia. They die from overeating. I think here, I was told, that there are so many people giving welfare food out that the bums, they can choose what kind of, what they want to eat today. They have options. Is that right, Mukunda? We have no options here. Eat what's available usually. But the bums on the street, they have options, they can choose. No, I don't want that. Okay, a little bit more. So that's not the problem. And if they're half sane, they have some place to sleep, it's not a problem, these things. But it's the real problem is whether they're becoming conscious of reality or not, whether they're advancing their consciousness towards the reality or they're sinking down into ignorance, of which simply ignorance means more and more hankering and more lamentation, more and more suffering. So that's up to us to distribute the Bhagavad. If we can't speak the Bhagavad Gita to people on the street, you can't go up to a person on the street and say, here, take this book. And they say, well, I don't have time. Well, you better make time. You don't want to become a dog in your next lifetime, do you? No, I don't. How much is the book? I'll take two of them. Do you have another one? No, people can't understand. They're not prepared to hear even the most simple philosophy. As Prabhupada said, Professor Kutowski at the University of Moscow, big professor in Indiology, Prabhupada tried to explain to him that your body's changing, but you're not changing the soul. He couldn't understand it for anything. Professor came to Prabhupada from Detroit University, an Indian professor, and he was teaching Indology. You know, Indology is the study of India, Indian philosophy. So the first question he asked Prabhupada was, Swamiji, can you tell me what Indology is? Suppose that you're teaching Indology, you don't know what it is. So he turned to Srupa Damodar Maharaj. He wasn't a Maharaj at the time, but he was a PhD in chemistry. And he said, Srupa Damodar, here's a professor in Indology, and he's asking me what Indology means. What do you think, Srupa Damodar? So Srupa Damodar said, he's a cheater, Prabhupada, he's a cheater. He doesn't know what the subject means, and he's teaching it. He has a position as a professor. So this is modern society, giving people big titles, big awards, big fame, big publicity, big recognition, but they're all in ignorance. They're all bewildered. They're all actually suffering, and they're going to suffer more in the future because of ignorance. And Prabhupada said, if you light a match in the dark room, the darkness can't put the match out. So anyone, if they don't have half a brain to understand how the body's changing, but the soul is eternal, and that there's a controller behind the universe, then at least we can give people prasadam. We can get them to chant Hare Krishna, and maybe take a book or read something. And that's the only hope. Otherwise, the whole universe is a failure. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
I just wanted to make a comment that Novak Djokovic, who is playing in Australian Open, do chant Hare Krishna sometimes, as I understand, and takes prasadam. Although I'm not 100% sure, maybe Sundar Gopal knows more.
Yes, something like that. This one, Prabhupada was talking to one Indian gentleman, Mr. Patel, and Mr. Patel on a morning walk, and Prabhupada asked him, what kind of work you do? He said, I have a factory. Prabhupada said, what kind of factory do you have? He said, I make glass. He said, really? He said, where does glass come from? So Mr. Patel said, it comes from sand. And Prabhupada said, well, where does sand come from? So the man was a little pious. He said, it comes from Krishna, Bhagavan. So Prabhupada's eyebrows raised up and said, oh, so you're stealing from Bhagavan. So the man was a little embarrassed. So he came back at the end of the walk and said, Swamiji, I just want to tell you, I give in charity. So Prabhupada said, oh, so you're a little thief. Yeah, when some famous person does even a little something, we make it a big deal, but how much he does is...
He's one of the rare celebrities that is publicly, you know, giving charity to the God.
Yeah, so whoever he is. No, that's good. I mean, we appreciate it, but it's not that big a deal. He doesn't make that... He's not noted for his lectures on God. He's only noted because he can hit a tennis ball over the net. And when they hit it back at him, he hits it more times back at them than they hit it at him. That's what he know. That's what he, when they think of him, they don't think of Krishna. But he gets a little credit. He's taking some prasadam, but that's good. But at the end of the time, at the end of his life, at the end, you know, when they add up the credits, you know, he's not going to have too many credits on Krishna's side. He got something, which is nice. But it would, I mean, like George Harrison, you know, he did something for Krishna. He actually did something with his fame. And therefore probably gave him a lot of mercy. But others, you know, we just exaggerate what their influence is, what our influences are. If we got ourselves together and actually did something significant to convince people that Krishna is God, then some of these people would come forward and actually do things more significantly. But right now, we're not exactly a very good support for these people. He has enough problems without, you know, identifying himself as a Hare Krishna.